The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. Welcome, welcome. Those of you I haven't seen since 2025, a Happy New Year. I was told today, oh, you have all January when you can say Happy New Year. I thought, like, oh, you know, maybe it's too late. No, no, no. Somebody told me I have all January, so Happy New Year. Last week I talked about the Eightfold Path, and just as a whole, I didn't go through each of the individual factors. And I talked about how it's a path that helps us find freedom. Freedom from suffering. And it does this largely through ending greed, aversion, and delusion. And at different levels and with three different trainings. So those of you who don't know, these Eightfold Path is grouped into three different trainings. Right? Well, we could say the training of wisdom, the training of mental development, and the training of ethics. And they're taught in different order depending on a whole number of different factors. So tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about this training in wisdom, which is conventionally when the Eightfold Path is taught, it starts here. And it starts with the first two factors, wise view and wise intention. And so these are at the beginning when we conventionally teach about the Eightfold Path, because we all have this idea that our experience, whatever experience we're having, is the way things are. It's the truth. We're saying it clearly, that we are observing with an unbiased view, and we have the clear picture of exactly what's happening. Well, for me, if I think like these past few years, just like in the news cycles, one thing that's abundantly clear is that there are so many different views. And everybody thinks they have the right one and they see it clearly. Dang it. And the Buddha recognized this too. Thousands of years ago, he was talking about this too. How we have this idea that the way that we see things is actually the way it is. Clearly, there's no other version of it. It's just this way. And he's pointing to, well, there's some ways in which we can maybe adjust our views or test our views, experiment with our views to help us to see more clearly, to help us have a sense of what's happening. Not because we're going to absolutely get to the core truth of everything and get everybody to agree with us that this is the core truth, because that's not going to happen. I promise you that. But what can happen is that we can use different criteria to evaluate, like, what is a view that's helpful for me and for others? Because we can argue about the truth all day, every day. And we see that getting played out in the news all day, every day. So we could say that right view is maybe our capacity. I'm using this word right view. I'll say a minute. Maybe I'll just say it right now. So I started by saying wise view, wise intention. I learned it as right view, right intention. So that often is what comes out of my mouth. But it's not right as in morally correct or, you know, the opposite of wrong. It's right because it's the most helpful. Doing something wrongly is something that doesn't achieve the aim that you want it to or isn't helpful in the way that you would like it to be. So maybe I'll say this, a little bit more about that. But right view is this idea of this ability to recognize, to be able to see, view, what leads to more trouble? What leads to more distress? What leads to more problems? What leads to more agitation? And what leads to less trouble? What leads to less agitation? What leads to less distress? And we could say this is part of what right view is for us to really see that. And it seems obvious, but it turns out that when we really look at it, we start to see, oh yeah, I thought this thing was going to cause me some happiness, but in fact, it's actually causing more stress. But we kind of like want to dismiss that. But this is asking us to really just pay attention for ourselves, not some dogmatic doctrinal teachings, but for ourselves, what causes more ease. And then with that, we can bring more ease into the world, our friends, our families, and maybe it spreads out from there and to make a difference. So wise view, right view, this capacity to recognize what leads to more suffering. And I'm using this word suffering as a generic word. This can be very mild. It can be terrible suffering. And what leads to the release or the ending of suffering? And then we could say that right intention comes next in this Eightfold Path, because once we have a sense of what causes suffering and what doesn't cause suffering, then we have an orientation to go. Let's go towards less suffering. Let's go away from more suffering. This seems like pretty obvious things. It's funny that, I hadn't really, before I encountered Buddhism, I never really thought of my life this way. I just, without even thinking about it, I had just kind of adopted the societal, familial, views. Like, do this, you'll be happy. Don't do that because you're not supposed to. I just kind of did without thinking, just kind of adopted these until I came to, some time in my life, I realized, in some ways I did all these things that were supposed to make me happy, and it's not making me happy in the way that I thought it was going to. And then now what? So the Eightfold Path as a whole is a way to lead the ending of this suffering. And it begins with wise view and right intention, just because it's helpful to recognize, well, what is suffering and what's causing it? And how can we get away from it? So we could say that right intention, wise intention, is the heart and mind leaning away from suffering and towards more ease, towards more freedom. So in some ways, you might say that right view is the lens, like lenses and glasses, and right intention is like the leaning of the heart. So if a person wanted to be cute with the title of their Dharma talk, they could say the wise view, right intention, the lens and the leans. the lens and the leaning, or something like this. Because here's the promise of the path of practice, this Eightfold Path, and I can say for myself, wow-wee, do I have so much less suffering. Wow-wee, is my life so much better since I've incorporated this. And so the promise is that we adjust the lens and aim the heart. Wise view and wise intention. So an example of this is that imagine you receive a short email or a text message that says, can we talk? And then boom, okay, right? That can go all these different places. One can be, uh-oh, something terrible is about to happen. It depends who it's from or the context or something like this. And then if you have this idea, uh-oh, something bad's going to happen, there's a way in which there might be a certain bracing, an avoidance, not wanting to deal with it. Or it could be like, oh, this person needs some connection. They're reaching out. They need some help. Oh, I want to help. I want to be support for their life. And then, you know, the body feels maybe open and soft, and maybe there's some anticipation. Oh, they're finally reaching out for some help. This will be great. I can maybe support this person, this dear person, or something like this. So it's the same facts. It's the same email, right? But the different view, the different orientation, we have an immediate different response. And then, of course, our behavior is different. So this idea of the view and the orientation that we have after it. And so we could say, in terms of this practice, like the Eightfold Path practice, or maybe just Buddhist practice in general, we can ask ourselves, when I'm looking through this lens, does it help to untangle suffering? Or does it help to make it the knot a little bit more tight and uncomfortable? Because here's the great news, right? Lenses can be changed. I had just new eyeglasses not too long ago. I'm sure many of you have had the same experience. You just change your glasses. Sometimes I mistakenly leave the house wearing my computer glasses, and I get in my car and I start driving. I'm like, oh, whoops. Yeah, this isn't going to work. And have to go back around. It's not a personal failing. It's not a character flaw. I'm just wearing the wrong glasses. Just change the view. In the same way, we can, with our practice, we can learn the view that we're having and change it. And this is practice. It's not something that we learn right away. It's not something that we can do right away. So in the wise view, we could say there's two basic lenses. And I'll say there's a number of different ways we could teach about wise view. I could give a number of different talks on wise view, looking at it from different perspectives, from different lenses, maybe you could say, and highlight different things. So I'm going to talk about two things here, which I think are foundational. And there's two lenses, if you will. One, cause and effect. This is not anything new to any of us. There are consequences to things we say, things we do, and the thoughts we have. Maybe sometimes we tend to think that the thoughts we have don't have consequences, but they do. And part of the reason why this rose up to just one of the steps in the Eightfold Path is because sometimes we tend to think like, oh, it doesn't matter. Nobody's watching. It doesn't matter if I don't return the grocery cart to the where I'm supposed to go, and instead I leave it in a place that takes up a parking spot. You know, this is just a small thing, but it's that little thing of the heart, like, it doesn't matter. My needs are more important than everybody else's. I'm just going to do this minor small thing. And I'll just say, in the Buddhist time, thousands of years ago, there was a lot of kind of like talk about philosophy and like, why do people do anything that they do? Is it ordained from the gods? Is it completely random? Is it due to things that they've done earlier? So this was an active discourse that was happening at the time of the Buddha. And so he is saying there are causes and effects. And there are no exceptions. For me, this is interesting. There are no exceptions. So maybe the effect is just felt in the heart or felt in the body immediately, right away. Or maybe it's something that has so many consequences that it's hard to, we don't even anticipate. I was teaching another class this morning, and we were looking at this poem, this fantastic poem. I'm not going to talk about the poem tonight. I can recommend it, though. It's called Letters from a Father by Mona Van Dyne. And it's this big poem, but when you start to look at it, there's this big shift that happens just because one person went to go visit a family. just to go visit them and to like just visit for like an hour or two or something. And then just from this, there's this big, and they went to visit because they cared about them. And through this small event, all these other things happened. And then this family's life just ended up becoming really different. So we don't always know the consequences, but there are consequences. So that's the first lens of right view. The second lens is the Four Noble Truths. Some of you will be familiar with this. First Noble Truth, there is dukkha. Dukkha is the distress, dissatisfaction, things don't feel quite right, terrible suffering. It's just, you know, one word that's this big wide range. This is the First Noble Truth that Buddha is acknowledging. Yes, this human experience includes dukkha, suffering, difficulties, unsatisfactoriness. Second Noble Truth, there's a cause. It falls from the first lens of cause and effect. And the cause is about clinging. It's about like really holding on. And sometimes the clinging is obvious and sometimes it's really subtle. It's not even clear to us maybe initially what it is that we're clinging on. Here's a hint. It usually has to do with some view we have about ourselves. I'm right. I want to be seen as the good guy or, you know, something like this. There's suffering. There's a cause of suffering. There's the ending of suffering. Like suffering ends, just like everything else. And then the fourth is there is a path to the ending of suffering. This is a big part of the Buddha's teachings. And the path is the Eightfold Path. The one that I'm talking about now is for this ending of suffering. So there's this way that I could say that the right view, wise view, doesn't have to be abstract teaching. Instead, it can be practical. We can even like do little experiments. You can try this. Try a day in which you're generous in just a maybe large way, small ways, but maybe a number of different ways. Just set an intention to be generous with your time, with your attention, or with your money, whatever it might be, your expertise. And then spend a day being petty, being cranky, being gossiping about other people. Like, can you believe in saying bad things about somebody else? Spend a day doing that. And then just notice how you feel. Compare it to the day when you were generous and the day in which you were petty and gossiping, right? You don't have to take these teachings as something, you know, that you have to adopt. It's not about beliefs. This is about come and see for yourself. Do these little experiments. You don't have to believe them because we don't want to adopt these. It's some moralistic, like, okay, this is what you have to do. It's more like an if-then statement. If you want to have less suffering, then try this. So, wise view as the first of the factors under wisdom and the Eightfold Path. We could say, maybe one way we could bring this into daily life, this idea of maybe the lens of the Four Noble Truths. You can imagine that somebody says something and there's a maybe certain tone or maybe the precise word that they said or the look that they gave you while they said it, or maybe in this day and age, the emoji that they sent when they sent it. There may be a way in which you might feel like, oh, yikes, or something. There could maybe be a tightening somewhere. Maybe it's in the gut or in the chest. It's just and it can be really slight. And so the Four Noble Truths, just this noticing like, there's this little clenching, this little sense of dread. Maybe this tightness in the body. Maybe it's in the chest. And then that would be the First Noble Truth. Oh yeah, this is uncomfortable. Second Noble Truth, maybe it's this question, like what's underneath this? What's fueling this tightness, this clench, this discomfort? Maybe it could be fear of conflict, like, oh no, I don't want to have some conflict. Or maybe it's the need to be seen a certain way. I want to be respected. I want to be seen. I want to be acknowledged or something like this. And you felt like you weren't respected. You weren't seen or you weren't acknowledged. There could be this like, oh, ouch. Or maybe there's this real wish for just some people to agree with you. You were just hoping like, say, yeah, that sounds great. Is what you were hoping. Instead, you got something else, or it's like, oh no. So just maybe to see, is there something holding on to an idea of how you want to be seen, perhaps, or how you want your experiences to go? And then the third noble truth is, we could say, well, what happens if there's a softening, a loosening of the grip? And you might say, what grip? I would say, loosen and soften anything. That's always the direction towards more freedom. Because sometimes we can't loosen the grip on the way that we want people to be seen or our fear of conflict. But maybe we can soften the body a little bit. And that'll be a support, actually. Maybe just a big exhale. The body and the mind influence each other so much. So just maybe start with the body. Or if you can, just think like, well, maybe it won't be so bad. Or, you know, you can use some words like this. But this idea that suffering can end, and it ends by addressing what's causing it. What's causing it is some tightness or some gripping, some clinging, craving. So can we soften the gripping, clinging, craving? And then the fourth noble truth, it could be what supports release right now. Maybe it's a pause. Maybe it's getting some curiosity about that question, about what's happening, like, wow, what's happening here? And that often kind of like shifts our relationship to what's happening. Or maybe it's just choosing the next sentence very carefully. Like, oh, yeah, I can feel that there's some tightness here. I'm going to need to be careful here. So right view, two lenses, cause and effect, without exception, at least in the relative world here. And two is the Four Noble Truths. Suffering, there's a cause, the ending, and what leads to the cause. And then right intention. Because it falls naturally once we start to see, oh yeah, this causes more suffering, more difficulties, more agitation, then there's an inclination to not want to do it. Then there's an inclination towards, yeah, let's go a different direction. Let's try something different. And it's true. If it's a pattern, if it's a habit we have, it's not easy to just all of a sudden change our intentions. It doesn't happen just because we have this idea. And the Buddha gives us some hints, some clues, some encouragement. Here are some three ways that reliably cause suffering. So here's some, doing the opposites of them can be a support, not for suffering. The things that what we cause suffering is craving, as I was talking about. Ill will, like this hatred or hostility, causes suffering for others, certainly, but wowee, does it cause a lot of suffering for us too. And some cruelty or hostility towards others or maybe even towards ourselves. These cause suffering. I don't think anybody will argue with this. So then the opposite of them, some relinquishment or renunciation or some goodwill rather than ill will or some compassion rather than cruelty. Relinquishment, goodwill, compassion. These are three parts of right intention that reliably lead to less suffering. You don't have to take my word for it. You can do experiments. You can play around and explore. What does it feel like if I act hostile towards somebody? How does it feel for me, and how does it feel for them, the way that we can tell by how they're responding? Or how does it feel when I have some compassion and some care? How does it feel for me? How does it feel for them? So I want to say just a few words about goodwill. Is one of the elements in right intention. The three elements, again, are relinquishment, goodwill, compassion. I want to talk just a little bit about the middle one, goodwill, because there's this way, especially in spiritual communities, we can think of, it's just about being nice. You just have to be nice. There's nothing wrong with being nice. It's good to be nice. I appreciate that. I don't like it when people are nice, of course. But goodwill is something else. Because there's this way that being nice can just be a strategy to help avoid conflict or help keep the peace or look good or something like this. But goodwill is something a little bit more than just that. It's about having the intention not to add hatred, but also to still be have clarity, still to see clearly. So maybe it's this well-wishing, even when you need to set a boundary with somebody. It's well-wishing when you need to speak firmly. Maybe it's well-wishing and disagreeing. So goodwill doesn't mean that you're nice and allow everybody or anybody to do everything. It's just not having hostility or hatred towards this. It's about setting boundaries from a place of care. It's about saying no from a place of care. It's about disagreeing without adding any hostility to it. And this can be a practice in itself. It's not necessarily easy, especially when we see modeled so much in the world that there's disagreement that's filled with hostility. But can we disagree without hostility? With a heart that's full of warmth and care? So maybe there's this way that we could say the goodwill says, I'm not adding ill will, but I'm also not abandoning clarity, as I said. So maybe one metaphor that we could use to tie together this right view and right intention, wise view and wise intention, is maybe we could imagine that wise view is a map. It's, you know, like a direction we want to go away from suffering and towards non-suffering and knowing that there's a path there. Suffering is here. Here's what fuels it. And here's what release could look like or can, what it tastes like. Maybe we have glimpses of that release and then a sense of how we can be free from it. And then right intention is the choice to use that map. So first, maybe we're viewing things and maybe through what's suffering, what's not suffering. And then can we use this map? Because that our body and mind will just naturally be trained towards, oh, yeah, if we look at this often enough, we're going to go a certain direction and not go another direction. So the Buddha offered these three things of renunciations or relinquishment is the first one, goodwill and compassion. But you'll find your own versions of this too. We don't have to limit ourselves to these three. It's not, this practice isn't about just following doctrinal lessons or something like this. It's a real encouragement to see for ourselves, to experiment, try things out for ourselves. One more thing I want to say about intention is that, you know, often we have mixed intentions. Maybe I would say even most often we have mixed intention. So don't throw things out because you can see, oh, there's some good intention. I want to care. And yet I can feel, I also want to feel better and look good at the same time. It doesn't mean we have to wait until we have perfectly pure intentions. It's helpful just to recognize which ones you have. And sometimes it can be helpful to recognize that intentions have different time horizons. So even though we might have this big overarching intention, for example, to care for a family member, a child or ailing parent or somebody who's sick, but maybe at that moment, there's a doctor's appointment. And so the immediate intention is like, okay, we got to get out the door here. So, here, let's get your shoes on or whatever it might be. So there might be some, intention that includes a little bit of agitation, or we don't want to be agitated if we don't have to be, but just recognize that sometimes in the short term, we might have, I don't want to say that the means justify the ends. I don't want to say that. What I want to say is just recognize that we have mixed intentions, and sometimes we can have this intention to that will be about our next sentence that we say, or the next tone of voice, or the next thing that we click on. But we don't want to escalate, we don't want to exacerbate, we don't want to withdraw, but is there a way that we can show up for this family member that we need to get out the door with care and recognizing that our intention in the short term is something that we might not just be. You know, this sounded like a good idea when I wrote these notes down, but now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm not agreeing with what I had written down. This is what happens, right? Yeah, because I don't want to say that the means justify the ends, because everything has a consequence. Some consequences are minor and some of them are bigger. But it can be helpful just to recognize that we do have these different time horizons for intentions. We have the big ones, like what direction do we want our life to go? And then maybe we have these episodic intentions, ones that are just for the next interaction with the family member, the next work meeting, the next meditation period. So there's one that's like, okay, I have intentions for specific activities. And then we might have intentions for just the next sentence, the next activity or something like this. So wise view and wise intention. As the first part of the Eightfold Path, we could say it's part of the wisdom training. And maybe if you want a simple way to hold all these words that I offered here today, is maybe we could say, adjust the lens towards what's suffering, what's not suffering, use that as a framework. And then allow that to maybe aim the heart. And recognize that sometimes we just want to go through comfort, but comfort and discomfort aren't necessarily the only descriptions of suffering and less suffering, because we will see that always going after comfort is in itself causes a lot of suffering. It doesn't allow us to actually be with our experience if we're always chasing comfort, because sometimes it's not comfortable. And then we just end up avoiding our whole life, so one thing after the other. So when you're feeling stuck, don't know what to do, or feel like you want things to go a different way, maybe just start with wise view. Where is suffering? What's causing suffering? Can there be a lessening of suffering? Wise intention can, if it's not clear, some ways in which to loosen the suffering, wise intention brings in some ideas. Relinquishment, goodwill, compassion, these always lead to less suffering, reliably. So with that, I'll close, I'll end my talk. Maybe there's, I feel like I want to offer a wish. In some way that we all learn to see clearly cause and effect and suffering and where there isn't suffering and the way away from suffering. And a way in which our attentions can help bring greater ease and peace and freedom to our lives. And in this way, we could make this world a better place. Like, why not start here with us? It has to start somewhere. Why not with us? Why not? So with that, I'll open it up to some questions or comments. Thank you. Somebody over here was just whispering to his neighbor, and I happened to hear, like, what was the third thing under intention? Relinquishment, sometimes called renunciation. The second one is goodwill, and the third one is compassion. Yes.
I'm doing the Eightfold Path.
Oh, nice.
Thing, program. And I was surprised when we started with right view that I can kind of have an inflated sense of self, you know, and I'm like, oh, I know what my views are. What's the big deal? But when I looked at it or looked at my views, I started looking at views, noticing views I had that aren't very helpful, and then views I have that seem to be helpful. And I found it kind of fascinating. So one of the views I came to mind that I remember that's not helpful for me is this moment is not enough.
Mm.
I realize that's underneath a lot. And then one that I do find helpful is that every person is as important and unimportant, just like me. Or maybe it's not even people, maybe it's animals too. But and just to really feel that, I like that one a lot when I get there. But I liked what you said about the intention being, oh, the view is the map, and then the intention is the...
Choosing to use the map.
Choosing to use the map. Yeah. Cool.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you for those first-person examples of the Eightfold Path program. For any of you who don't know, I think it's usually every September or October. There's like a year-long program going through the Eightfold Path, and it's fantastic. There's exercises to do each week. Everybody's assigned an individual that they meet with one-on-one to talk about it, and it's really just helps bring it alive into your life. I taught it a few times, and it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I can see. I will probably do it again.
Yeah, a lot of people do it again and again. Yeah. Just, it's so rich, so rich. Yeah. Thank you, Leah.
Thank you. So I saw a really beautiful example of that compassion starting in somebody's heart and that being the cause for an effect down the line that was really beautiful. My wife and I are really moved by those monks who are walking from Texas to Washington, D.C., and the dog.
And the dog.
This is new to anyone. Just Google monks walking dog, and you'll see what I mean. And about a week ago, we were at a dinner party, and we kind of got taken hostage by this guy who just went on a rant about all the things that are wrong with this country. And I was sort of settling in for a lot of suffering before I got my dessert. And the guy paused for breath, and my wife said, "Have you heard about those monks?" And it sort of stopped him. He said, "No, what?" And I think he sort of noticed that in order to even mention them, she had to go to a really lovely, beautiful place inside. And he got curious. And it changed the entire conversation and lessened our suffering. And I thought this peacefulness started in this leader monk's heart, got captured on somebody's phone, went into a YouTube feed, onto my wife's screen, into her heart, and then into the room in the conversation.
Nice.
And there was enough of it left that it changed everything.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Fantastic. It doesn't take a lot, right? It can make a difference. Thank you. And I think right behind you for the microphone.
Thanks for the talk and introducing the concept of intentions can have different time frames. It's mm-hmm. something I'm going to be thinking about. And I think my first thought was, how nice would it be if, because I think a lot of times disagreements among people are a result of not sharing or being explicit about intentions and time frames. And so I was like, how nice would it be if everyone was explicit at all times? And then I recognized a different compulsion that I struggle with, which is like, I want to know everything at all times. More information is better, that kind of thing. And I don't know if these are positioned as opposites, but I noticed that in the talk you all talked about relinquishment. And so I was like, what about relinquishing that, that need? So it's been kind of fun to play with these ideas. But.
Yeah, yeah. And it can be fun to kind of relinquish this, wanting to know, right? This is a person with a couple of graduate degrees, right? So I have been somebody been chasing knowledge quite a lot. And then to realize, oh, yeah, actually it's kind of fun. Like, I don't know. And just enjoy not knowing in some kind of way, like the curiosity or the willingness to be surprised or something like this can be fun too. Thank you. Thank you. Well, maybe the microphone can migrate down here, and we'll end after this.
I like what you said about there are causes and there are effects, and there are no exceptions. And then I also liked your example of, where do you leave the shopping cart? Do you put it where it's supposed to go, or do you just leave it blocking a parking space? And it called into question. I think you said this, but I think it called into question whether or not it's a good thing or useful to categorize the effects of our causes as major or minor, rather just look at the cause and effect, whether it's helpful or harmful, and it can be hazardous to try to just say, oh, this is minor.
Yeah, that's my sense. Like if we were, because then there's a way like, oh, it's okay, because it's minor.
It gives you an out.
Yeah, it gives you an out.
Or you think it does. So leave out whether it's major or minor.
That's my sense. But I don't, you know, I think experiment with it. Why not try it?
Well, sometimes there are difficulties. And by trying to not have a minor effect, you can have a major effect. So I know there's no absolute roadmap.
Yeah, yeah.
But in general.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Bill, for the question. Okay. So thank you all. Thank you all for your time this evening. Wishing you a wonderful rest of the evening and safe travels home. Thank you. And if you'd like, you're welcome to come up here and talk to me.